Peter March gave a kidney to a stranger, an act that resulted in a stranger giving a kidney to his wife, Narissa. Today, we'll talk about kidney transplants and donations. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Just a few weeks ago, in a three-day period, five people received kidney transplants thanks to something called a kidney-paired transplant chain at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. This hour, I'll talk with transplant surgeon Dr. Johan Arts. I'll also talk with Ted Cochran, CEO of the My Angel Foundation, and with three of the people involved in that kidney transplant chain, two donors and one recipient. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Right now, there are 506 people waiting for kidney transplants in Iowa. This hour, we're going to talk about kidney transplants from the perspective of a transplant surgeon, kidney donors, and kidney recipients. A new system for pairing donors with recipients offers hope for people on the waiting list. In fact, just a few weeks ago, in a three-day period, five people received kidney transplants thanks to something called a kidney-paired transplant chain at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. Later this hour, we'll talk to two donors and a recipient who were involved in that chain. And with me now is someone else who was very involved in that chain, Dr. Johan Arts. He's a transplant surgeon at Mercy Medical Center. Hello, Dr. Arts.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And kidney transplants are performed on patients with chronic kidney failure or end-stage renal disease. What exactly does that mean?
Basically, the kidneys perform a function 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of filtering our blood of excess fluid that we drink, but also of the toxins produced by the body that we need to get rid of. There are multiple diseases that cause renal failure, ranging from high blood pressure or underlying kidney diseases, and that will eventually lead to renal failure, causing patients to require hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis.
And dialysis is a system to cleanse the blood in much the same way as a kidney would, but of course it's an external process.
Yes, that's correct. It's right. What the body does 24 hours a day, seven days a week. We do actually three times a week in four-hour sessions, typically on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule, which makes it very hard on the body physiologically.
And why patients, is that so hard on the body?
Because of what the machine, the external filtering machine, does in a short period of time, what our bodies are accustomed to doing continuously.
Okay, so dialysis is something that can keep people alive, but it's not the optimal way to do it.
Correct. It is more of a way of keeping people alive, but it does not provide them a very excellent quality of life, so to speak.
What are the things that can lead to chronic kidney failure?
Well, there's multiple different types of kidney diseases that cause renal failure. One of the most common ones is diabetes, which is a disease of the pancreas where not enough insulin is produced, or where insulin, where the tissues become resistant to the insulin. Another common cause is hypertension or high blood pressure, which is unfortunately a disease that is not recognized until typically later on in life because it doesn't exhibit any symptoms externally.
Are there specific groups of people that are at higher risk for this than others?
Certainly, obesity can also lead to increased insulin resistance and lead to diabetes. So certainly, people who are overweight are certainly at increased risk.
What makes someone a good candidate for receiving a kidney transplant?
There are certainly contraindications to kidney transplantation, but oftentimes we look at all the different patients who might be eligible or who are interested in receiving a kidney transplant.
Is there an age limit on people who could undergo this surgery and benefit from it?
No, actually, chronological age in and of itself is not a contraindication to kidney transplantation. As a matter of fact, several months ago, we transplanted an 80-year-old gentleman who is actually doing very well at this time. It's not so much the chronological age, but the actual underlying physiological age of the patient, so to speak.
Now, of course, we have two kidneys, which creates an opportunity for living people to donate a kidney to someone who needs one. How do you find a match? How do you find a kidney that can be successfully transplanted into a patient?
Well, we have people step forward on a voluntary basis who might be interested in wanting to donate a kidney. And one of the first steps we undertake is checking their blood type. There are four different types of blood type that have to be compatible with the potential recipient. And once that is verified, we can proceed with the workup of the donor to see if they are an eligible potential kidney donor, both from the surgical perspective but also from the medical perspective, to make sure that they do not have high blood pressure and that they do not have a risk of developing diabetes throughout their lifetime. But then we also look at the psychosocial aspect and how that might affect the patient psychosocially, and find out to see if they have support from their employer and things like that.
And we're going to focus on the donors a little bit later in the hour, but when a match is found, this can also be a kidney that could come from someone who has died, right?
Yes, there's two types of kidney donors. The standard process that most people are familiar with are the deceased donors, patients who have become brain dead for multiple reasons, such as possible car accidents or strokes. Those kidneys are harvested and given to people who are on hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis. But then also living donors can step forward, and we can safely and without harm harvest a kidney from a healthy living person to also donate to someone who needs a kidney.
Is there a kind of donation that's more successful than the other kind? Are living donors a better opportunity for success than a deceased donor?
Yes, that is correct. When we compare the two groups of deceased donor kidneys and living donor kidneys, we found that living donor kidneys, or people who have received a kidney from a living person, actually perform better in a number of aspects. First of all, the longevity of the kidney transplant is longer in comparison to receiving a kidney from a deceased donor. We also have a decreased or lower rate of complications after the surgery and long-term as well.
When someone receives a kidney, what is the surgery process like? How long does this take?
The surgery to receive a kidney is a very complex, fairly high-risk surgery because the patients tend to be very ill from a medical perspective. But the entire process takes about 5 hours, 4.5 to 5 hours operation to actually implant the kidney. And what we do is we do not tend to remove the patient's original kidneys they were born with. We leave those behind under most circumstances. There are certainly exceptions. But we tend to just add a new kidney into their bloodstream, and we tend to hook those up to the blood vessels that go to the legs so that we can hook up the ureter, which is the tube that drains the urine from the kidney to the bladder, that can be hooked up then to the recipient's bladder.
Obviously, this is an extremely complicated surgery, so I'm sure there are many risks. But what are the main risks for the recipient?
The main risks for the recipients, I would say, is certainly when you look at the long term, and I will not focus on the complication issues immediately during surgery or after surgery, but more from the long term perspective, are two things. Is number one is a rejection of the organ, and number two is infection. We have to basically trick the body's immune system into thinking that this kidney is the patient's own tissue. because that's how we survive in the universe, is that the body will always know that there's something inside of us that is not us, that is foreign. That's when we have a cold or the flu, and that's how our body defends and survives in the universe. So when we transplant an organ into a patient, that person is always going to know that there's something inside of them that is not themselves. So the body will try to attack it. And what we have to do is we have to manage the immune system by suppressing it so that the body will tolerate and accept it, but not over-suppress the patient so that they die from viral infections or fungal infections or bacterial infections.
And the patient will need to be on medicine to suppress this immune system forever?
Yes, that is correct. I always tell my patients, yes, it's going to be an improvement to becoming off hemodialysis, but I tell them that they will be trading the disease of being a renal failure patient to getting the disease of being a transplant patient, meaning that even though they have a new organ and they will no longer have to go to dialysis, they will have to take special immunosuppression medication twice a day for the rest of their life. Because typically, patients who stop taking their medications, whether it's a month, a year, 5 or 10 years after transplant, the body will always recognize that there's something inside of them that's not their own tissue.
And so that would make them far more vulnerable to colds, flu, all kinds of viruses, right?
We have really made a tremendous progress from the perspective of finding that balance of suppressing the patient just enough so that they will tolerate the organ and not reject it, but not over-suppress them so that they die from opportunistic infections or things like that.
What is the success rate of kidney transplants?
The success rate of the living donor kidney transplants approximates 95% of graft survival within the first year, with a certainly higher rate compared to the deceased donor kidneys. But multiple patients have kidneys that have been transplanted multiple decades ago.
So you can live basically a long, normal life.
Yes, I always tell the patients that oftentimes after kidney transplant, it really improves their quality of life, and patients are able to return to full-time employment. Patients are able to travel internationally and visit relatives because being on hemodialysis really affects people's quality of life and lifestyle.
This hour, we're talking about kidney transplants. In a moment, we're going to focus on the donor experience, and we're also going to talk to someone who helps raise awareness about the need for kidney donations and other organ donations and his experience receiving a kidney transplant. With me right now is Dr. Johan Arts. He's a transplant surgeon at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines, and you're welcome to join our conversation as well. If you've received a kidney, if you've given a kidney, if this is something that affects your life or the life of someone in your family, let us know. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about kidney transplants. And with me is Dr. Johan Arts. He is a transplant surgeon at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. And joining us is Ted Cochran. He is the CEO of My Angel Foundation, which raises awareness of the need for organ donation. He's also himself the recipient of a kidney transplant. Hello, Ted.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And let's talk about your story, which goes back a long way. You started having serious health problems when you were a year and a half old. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, to simply put, when I was a young toddler, they identified that I had a blockage at the tip of my bladder that was causing reflux. And as you can imagine, as a young toddler, it's pretty serious because reflux was damaging my kidneys pretty quickly. Even though they was able to, you say, perform life-saving surgery and remove that blockage, reflux continued throughout my life, which eventually led me down the path of needing a kidney transplant at the age of 28 years old.
So when you were 28 years old, tell me what your health was like before the transplant.
You know, my story is a little different than most. You know, I'm probably the most blessed person out there. I'm really blessed throughout my life. You know, when it was identified that I needed a kidney transplant, you know, was something that we kind of knew in a way throughout my life. We just didn't know when that was going to happen. But when it finally was identified, I was able to have some family members that stepped up pretty quickly to get tested. And through that testing process, a living donor was identified. So my wait on the national transplant waiting list was pretty short. I was able to dodge dialysis, and my donor was my mother. So unlike many others out there, majority of those needing kidney transplants, because I was blessed and had a living donor, I was able to dodge dialysis. But my quality of life at that time was no different. My creatinine was pretty high. I was extremely tired throughout the day. It's just wasn't really active, I guess. And it just wasn't, I don't know how I can explain it. It wasn't the quality of life that I wanted, but it's just something that I had to deal with at that time.
Having struggled with these health problems really your entire life, mm-hmm. had you ever had what you considered to be a normal quality of life?
Oh, I did. I did, absolutely. You know, there's just anybody with health challenges throughout their life, it's all put in perspective, I guess. Even though I had multiple surgeries as a young child, and throughout my young life, my parents made sure that I still had the best life as I could possibly have. I still was active as I could possibly possibly be, I guess. And, I guess as a young child, I was kind of, you could say, implanted in my thinking that, life gives you challenges, you kind of face them, and you move on. And that's kind of what we did throughout my life. And, I still had active life. Yeah, compared to others, it may be different. You know, I wasn't able to play in some sports or whatnot due to the danger of it, but I was still active as much as I could. So, yeah.
When you received that kidney transplant from your mother, mm-hmm. how long did it take you to recover from the surgery?
It's pretty short. If my memory calls, I think I was out for about 6 weeks of work. But the moment I woke up from my transplant, I instantly could tell the difference. And the recovery is like any other recovery I had when I had multiple surgeries as a child. So that surgery part wasn't new to me. But it was relatively quick. And like I said, because I felt so good, the recovery wasn't that big of an issue for me because the amazing difference when you have a new healthy kidney and compared to the one you had before, it's dramatic. It really is.
How did your mother come through the surgery?
Oh, she was great. She was great. She recovered great just along the same path, when I recovered. And, to this day, she's doing great. We celebrated our 6-year transplant anniversary date this past August. And today, we are both doing amazing. And it's definitely been a life-changing event. And the second chance of life is something I definitely don't take for granted. So.
Well, and one of the things that has come out of this second chance for mm-hmm. life for you is the My Angel Foundation. What made you want to start a foundation?
Going through the transplant experience and, after receiving a transplant, like I said, I was blessed, and I knew that because I had a living donor. But at that time, there were 90,000-plus people, men, women, and children across the United States that were waiting for their second chance of life, and the unfortunate fact at that time, around 11 of them was passing away each and every day because they didn't receive their gift. And that wasn't something that I was comfortable with because here I was able to get the gift of life through a living donor. I just wanted to make sure I could do what I could to help educate the general public about the facts of organ and eye and tissue donation because there were so many misconceptions out there, and those still remain. I just thought if I could just help inform the minds of Iowans and people across the nation about the facts, that maybe we could increase the number of people that become registered donors here in Iowa. And that's happened. 6 years ago, there were 90,000 Iowans registered. Today, there's 1.8 million plus. And a lot of that has to do with the campaigns and the programs of My Angel Foundation and the Iowa Lions Eye Bank and the Iowa Donor Network all do collaborate together, and also due to new legislation. But, it's just a simple passion. I wanted to make sure that I helped do what I could to make sure others receive their second chance of life, and that's something, the passion that continues today. And as a foundation, we've been blessed to grow from a small little foundation to relatively a pretty active foundation here in Iowa.
Well, it's one thing to make a note on your driver's license, put a sticker on your car, tell your loved ones that I will donate my organs if something happens to me. It's another thing to say, I will give someone my kidney. And Dr. Arts, let's bring you back into the conversation here. If someone says, okay, I want to become a kidney donor, a living kidney donor, what are the risks that they need to think about?
I would like to say that overall it's a safe process. You know, we have come along a long way in protecting the donor. You know, we are physicians and we take an oath that we will do no harm. So really the burden is upon us to protect the donor as well. And that's why we have to do a thorough evaluation both medically and surgically to make sure it is safe. So the patient goes through an extensive evaluation to make sure there are no risk factors for high blood pressure, diabetes, other underlying illnesses and diseases that can cause that patient to go into renal failure multiple decades from now.
Okay, because you don't want to pick somebody who's going to be a candidate for a kidney donation themselves.
Exactly. And sometimes it happens that we have patients who step forward and say, I'd like to donate a kidney, and we do discover a medical problem that needs to be addressed by the family physician, or we do diagnose patients with uncontrolled high blood pressure or diabetes. And then obviously we do not use their kidney, but we send them to the appropriate specialist to be cared for.
And I'm guessing that once somebody says, I want to give someone a kidney, it's not hard to find someone to give it to, although also I would guess that a lot of those donations are already directed at a family member or someone they love.
That is true. The demand is much greater than the supply, so to speak, both for deceased as well as living donor kidneys. But oftentimes we do have situations where we do have a pair, either a husband-wife team or other relatives that would like to donate to their loved one but are unable to because of underlying medical reasons such as incompatible blood types and things like that.
This is a major surgery to have a kidney removed. What are the risks of surgery for the donor?
There are certain risks involved that we always have to be very careful to explain to our patients. Obviously, one of the main risk factors is bleeding that can occur during the operation. But if you take your time and don't cut corners and don't rush, the process is very safe. Other complications that can occur could be a wound infection, a hernia formation, which is a weakening of the abdominal strength layer. All those risks are actually very, very minimal and do outweigh the benefit of the gift of life by donating a kidney. And we just have to make very clear to the patients that they understand those small risks. And most people are okay with that, and they're willing to take on that risk and proceed with the surgery.
Are there any long-term effects that a person who donates a kidney, a healthy person who donates a kidney, will feel?
It's, as you mentioned, Charity, it's a very, also a big operation for the donor, also lasting about 4 to 5 hours, start to finish. And even though they're not hospitalized long, they typically are only in the hospital for 2-3 days because we do the surgery laparoscopically with very small incisions. The recovery is about 6 to 8 weeks, particularly from a strength and energy perspective and pain control and things like that.
And is this something that insurance providers would cover? If I said I would like to give someone my kidney, would my insurance provider say, yes, we'll cover that?
Certainly, the financial aspect is certainly a great concern of all the patients and people who might be interested. But it is actually the insurance company of the recipient that pays for the operation of the donor and all their care, including hospitalization, post-operative recovery, and also potential complications that might occur.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Mike Dodge is a kidney donor. He lives in Mason City, and he was involved in this paired kidney transplant chain I've referred to a few times. We'll talk about it more in depth in a couple of minutes. But, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
How old are you, Mike?
I am 38.
You're 38 years old. What made you decide that you wanted to donate a kidney?
I don't really have any event or anything like that that made me want to give. It really boiled down to is I couldn't find a good reason not to.
Okay. This is something that you have a little bit of a history with, because you've also been a bone marrow donor, a stem mm-hmm. cell donor also as well. How did you get involved in bone marrow donation? Was there an event that made you think that that's something you wanted to do?
No. You can trace it back to my grandfather, who was a large amount of blood donations to the Red Cross. And I was in college, and I was going to a blood draw, and they asked me, hey, would you be interested in being on the list to be a bone marrow donor? And it's just an extra vial. I said, yeah, sure, no problem. Lo and behold, 10 years later, they found me and said, hey, you're a potential match for somebody to do a bone marrow donation. Can we go ahead and do all the testing? Absolutely. Let's go.
How long did it take you to decide that you would indeed give someone your kidney after you had this idea that maybe it was something you wanted to do?
Whenever I go into something that's a big decision for me, the way I go about it is I think about it for a while, and then I kind of forget about it, and then I go back to it and look at it from all angles. I would say all in all, a couple years is from when I started thinking about it.
And from the moment that you said, yes, I want to give someone a kidney, how long did it take for someone to take you up on that?
About a year, eight months to a year, somewhere in there.
Okay. And you had surgery in January. You were part of this chain that I've mentioned at Mercy Medical Center in mm-hmm. Des Moines. How did the surgery go?
Things went really pretty good. I went in on a Wednesday and I went home on a Monday just to make sure that everything was okay. And all in all, I'd say it took me about 3.5 weeks to really get back to about 100%. Maybe could have gone a little quicker if I wasn't such a slug and laying around at home for a while. But once I got up and moving really well, I bounced back really well.
So you would say you are fully recovered right now?
Absolutely.
How did people in your life respond to this decision that you made?
Oh, at first it was kind of met like, oh, what are you doing? Why are you going to do this? And then the more, once the kind of shock value wore off, my family who knows me very well is kind of like, yep, yeah, you know, that's just kind of what Mike does.
How about your employer?
My employer was fine with it. It was no big deal. In all actuality, I coordinated the changing of jobs with my surgery after everything got set. And now I'm actually on to a new employer.
That didn't seem a little risky with your benefits coverage going through a major surgery?
No, I wasn't worried about it at all. I mean, I know that anything that were to have happened is completely taken care of. I mean, as a donor, they really go out of their way to take care of you to make sure everything's okay.
And Dr. Arts, did you actually perform Mike's surgery?
Yes, that's correct. I harvested Mike's kidney. That's correct.
And I have heard people say that in some ways, it is the donor who's at greater risk because there's so much emphasis on the person receiving a kidney. What you have said has made me think that that's not the case, at least in your practice. But what do you do to make sure that this healthy person is getting all of the observation, all of the care that they could possibly need to undergo a major surgery?
Yes, patients such as Mike are in a very unique situation in that they are the only patient who undergo surgery that is not necessary for themselves. If you think about any other patient who requires an operation, it is for to treat a cancer or a broken bone or neurosurgery, or they are involved in car accidents. There is always a reason for those patients to undergo an operation, just like the kidney recipients have a reason to undergo this operation.
And go on.
Yeah, the donors actually don't. It's not for their benefit. It is actually to improve someone else's life. So the burden is on us to really do it in a safe manner and as safely as we can do that. And we take multiple steps along the way, starting with a very thorough and detailed evaluation process to make sure it's going to be a safe process. But then also the actual surgery needs to be carried out very meticulously and very detailed so that complications are avoided.
I want to get back to you, Ted Cochran. When you hear Mike's story, that must just warm your heart. But before I let you go, we have just a moment left.
Yeah, go ahead.
What would you like to say to people who might think, well, it's something, it's a wonderful gift to give. It's something I'd like to do, but it's really frightening.
Well, there's a couple things to consider. It depends if you're talking about living donation or deceased donation.
I'm talking about living donation.
Living donation. You know, I think majority of people who have a loved one and see them going through dialysis, I would like to think on the majority of the time that there are those who want to step up and become a living donor. But unfortunately, a lot of them probably get declined or whatnot because of health issues. Or like the doctor has said, there's extensive testing that goes through to making sure the living donor can safely and healthily become a donor. You know, Mike's a living angel. You know, he's the Good Samaritan donor, basically somebody who decides to donate who doesn't know anybody. And that's pretty incredible. He is truly a living angel that has, through what he has done. He's a rare breed, unfortunately, and it's a big decision to donate somebody who you don't know.
Well, we are out of time, but Ted Cochran, thank you so much for being with us today.
You.
Ted Cochran is the CEO of My Angel Foundation. You can find a link to the My Angel Foundation on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. Mike Dodge, a kidney donor who lives in Mason City, he's going to stay with us along with Dr. Arts of Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about kidney transplants this hour. You're welcome to join our conversation as well if you have any questions about the process of being a living kidney donor, or if you have a donation or receiving a story to tell, let us know. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Dr. Johan Arts. He's a transplant surgeon at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. Mike Dodge is here with us of Mason City. He's a kidney donor. And there were two more people involved in this kidney transplant chain at Mercy Medical Center in January that are with us now. Narissa and Peter March of Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Narissa.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And hello, Peter.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And before we get to your individual stories, Dr. Arts, explain how this transplant chain worked.
It actually all started with what we call a humanitarian donor. It was a young gentleman in his early 30s who stepped forward and approached our hospital and said, I would like to donate a kidney to someone who needs one. And he didn't have relatives such as a parent or a child or a sibling who needed a kidney, but just said, I'm offering one of my kidneys because the need is so great. Use it to the best of your ability. So at that point, with such an incredible gift, our fantastic transplant team sat down and looked at all the patients who needed a kidney and all the donors who would like to donate. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes we are unable to use the pairs because of incompatible blood type or other medical reasons. And actually, we had quite a few patients who already had been waiting for a kidney for a long time who did have a living donor but were not able to be matched up. So by using that humanitarian donor at the beginning of the chain, we were actually able to match up five pairs. So we had five recipients and five donors.
I would guess often you just have one pair. What made this possible to have so many people involved?
It takes an incredible amount of work, months of preparation, including all our support staff, particularly the immunology laboratory, which is, I would call it the brain behind the chain, because we have to look at each individual patient's blood type and the different antibodies that they might have or not have. And it's like solving a puzzle. And the team was able to accomplish that with a very incredible dedication and commitment. And with all the hard work that took multiple months, we were able to make it a reality.
Narissa is one of the recipients involved in this chain. How long had you been waiting for a kidney donation?
A year and a half.
And what were the health problems that led you to need one?
I actually had my first kidney transplant when I was in my 20s. And at that time, my brother donated his kidney, and that kidney lasted about 15 years. And I guess it just started to, you know,
fail.
And so I needed another kidney transplant. And I have two brothers that were a match, but they weren't healthy enough to get to donate their kidneys. So my husband, we've never heard of a exchange before, a kidney exchange, until we came to Mercy Hospital. And at that time, they approached my husband. They said, would you want to do an exchange? And my husband, without hesitating, of course, you know, he wanted to do it. I was a little scared, but there was no doubt, you know, my husband, you know, would want to do the exchange for me.
And Peter,
yes,
you couldn't give Narissa your kidney.
No.
But how difficult was it for you to make the decision to give someone your kidney?
Oh, very easy. I was very excited about it. You know, Narissa and I have been together since college, since 1989, and she first got lupus when we lived on the Big Island, and I've seen the ups and downs of her health and her good and bad days, and I went through dialysis, and I could see how the medicine and the technology change, and I'm just, you know, grateful to Dr. Ertz and Mercy Hospital and the kindness of the people of Iowa and the National Living Donor Assistance Center, just all the people that have made this happen, because it's like night and day for us. It's like a brand new life, and we're so much better off from it. So we're very thankful.
As Narissa was saying that her brother was not healthy enough to donate a kidney, were you concerned at all that you might not be able to donate a kidney?
No, not really. I mean, I've always worked hard. I've always worked like 80 hours and always just been real positive. You know, I've always tried to eat the superfoods and be healthy and work out and just, you know, keep a good attitude.
So you were preparing for this your whole life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm better off from it too. So I'm very glad I did it. Anyone out there considering donation, I would highly recommend it. I mean, recycle yourself, because we have, 536 people in the state of Iowa right now needing kidneys, and most of us have to, you know, so why not help someone else out? You know, I'm proud of my scar from my surgery. I'll gladly show it to anyone, and you know, to anyone out there considering it, I would say welcome to the Kidney Club. Please donate and please help someone else out. It's the humanitarian thing to do, and this is an easy problem for us to fix. I mean, we have bigger problems out there, you know, like the economy and jobs and the sequester and political things. But kidney, you know, disease, this is something we can fix and we should fix, and we should be proud to fix it as Americans.
And Peter, was Narissa receiving a kidney contingent on you giving a kidney?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And Dr. Arts, was that a situation for a number of the people in this chain where someone in their life had to be willing to donate so they could get involved in this?
Yes, that was actually one of the stipulations that actually was required of all the donor recipient teams, and that actually made it a success. It's always disappointing when a donor steps forward and, for example, with Peter, you know, to hear the news that he's willing to donate but can't give his wife a kidney. It's hard to share that disappointing news with them. So you have basically 4 to 5 different couples in that similar situation. And so for Peter and Narissa, Peter had to give a kidney to a stranger so that another stranger could give a kidney to his wife. So each pair was able to help their loved one in an indirect way, so to speak.
Is this the first time you've done a chain like this at Mercy Medical Center?
Yes, actually, this is the first kidney pair donation chain actually performed in the state of Iowa. And chains can range anywhere from 2 pairs to 20, 30 pairs, which have been done in multiple large metropolitan areas on the East and the West Coast. But we are very proud to have been able to do this in the state of Iowa.
That must
at Mercy
have put
Medical Center.
A tremendous amount of pressure on all of the resources at the hospital to do 10 surgeries.
Yes, 10 surgeries in 3 days. It took a tremendous effort from everyone involved, including the people admitting all the patients, because we had to maintain anonymity prior to the operations to making sure there is enough surgical equipment and surgical instruments and nursing staff to the follow-up care on the transplant units to provide enough nursing staff and et cetera.
Now, Mike, you came into this chain without having a partner already, without having someone else in your life who needed a kidney. Mm-hmm. Do you know who got your kidney?
I do.
Do you have a relationship with them?
We met for the first time the day after surgery. I guess our families cross paths the day of surgery, and they're supposed to stay anonymous, and they're like, "Well, yeah, but I kind of know who you are, and it kind of looks like you're who I am." But I met Nick, is his name, the day after surgery, the first time at a press conference while we were still both in the hospital. And then right after that, I went down into his room to just kind of talk with him myself.
What's that like to get to know someone you just gave a kidney to?
It's a little off-putting, to be honest. I mean, I'm happy to do it. I mean, I know myself. I'm happy to give. I'm happy to help anybody out that I can. But then to be put face to face with the person that you just gave something, and it is kind of significant.
It's a unique it's very situation. Significant. We'll take the kind of off of that. That's a very significant gift.
It's just a unique situation, and it wasn't anything that I prepared myself for, because how do you do that? How do you get ready to say, hey, here you go, my kidney's over there in you now.
Do you think he's somebody that you'll maintain a relationship with?
Oh, I get updates from him once in a while. I know that he was in the kidney clinic down in Des Moines yesterday, and I was not. So I'm pretty sure I'll get an update either later today or tomorrow morning.
And you guys are Facebook friends now?
Yes, we are.
All right. So you're in the same social network. Peter, do you know who you gave your kidney to?
Yes, I do. I gave mine to Dawn, and I immediately felt a connection with her. I just, I felt something in my heart. I definitely felt a humanitarian connection, and almost like she's family or a part of me, so I felt wonderful about it.
Having your wife received a kidney or receive a kidney at the same time, maybe that took a little of that awkwardness away, because you got something incredibly special that day as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think the whole experience just, brought me closer to my wife, and I just had a tremendous outpouring of love, not only from the people at Mercy Hospital. I mean, they were just so kind and going out of their way to help us and be polite and courteous. Dr. Franklin and Dr. Arts, the whole transplant staff. And then also the National Living Donor Assistance Center, they helped us with our travel expenses. So, they paid for our gas, our hotel, so it made it possible for us to do the kidney transplant donation. Otherwise, I was kind of concerned about taking the time off from work and, how we were going to afford it and swing it and stuff. But
it is an expensive process.
It is. And anyone considering it, please do it. Jump in and do it. It's worth it. I'd highly recommend it.
Do you think you'll maintain a relationship with Dawn?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. She invited me on her pontoon boat this summer to go tubing, and she's planning her Disney trip. Nurse and I used to live in Florida. We were actually at Disney when Nurse's kidney started to fail. So we've been exchanging information, about Disney and our lives. So we'll definitely stay in contact.
And Nerissa, do you know the person who gave you your kidney?
I do. Mary. When I first met her, it was very emotional. I couldn't really – they asked me the press was asking me questions. This is the first time I met her. And I really couldn't say anything, because it was emotional for me.
Dr. Arts, this must be such an unusual situation to have this group of people who have all interacted with each other in this just incredibly powerful way, getting to know each other and talking to the press. What has it been like for you?
It's also been a very emotional process for me to actually be part of the meetings where the actual donors and recipients get to see each other and meet each other for the very first time. And it's very rewarding. It's something that nobody can teach you, or it just because of all the hard work of all the patients and the medical staff involved. But to be able to see that and to see people hug each other and start crying when they actually meet one another, it's just an awesome experience.
I want to bring Frank from Linn County into the conversation. Hi, Frank.
Yes.
And your grandson received a kidney transplant?
Yes. He was born with a condition they called prune belly syndrome, of which there's a big, long medical name for that I don't remember. But he took medication for quite a while, till then he finally needed dialysis when he was probably 13 or 14. And then they found a match with his mother, who is our daughter. And so our daughter donated a kidney to Austin, and that was about 4 years ago. And he's really did fine. He's got a pretty good job now, and he's enjoying life and doesn't have to bother with the dialysis all the time. So it's really been a wonderful thing.
That is wonderful. And how is your daughter? Did she come through it well, too?
Oh, yes. She did fine.
Oh, that's wonderful. Frank, thank you so much for sharing your story. And Dr. Arts, with the story of this paired kidney donation chain and so many people talking about the experience of being living donors, do you have a lot of hope that maybe this is something that more and more people will be getting involved in?
Oh, absolutely. This has been a tremendously personally rewarding experience to actually help people the way we have been able to do it. We are really pushing the edge and the limits of medicine and surgery, and to be able to be part of that and to be able to be providing that to the people of central Iowa, including the surrounding areas, is very exciting, and this is only the beginning. We've done this once. It was a trial run, so to speak, and I have been very pleased and very happy with the outcome and how everything proceeded so smoothly. And we will continue building from here.
Is there already another chain in the works?
Well, we are talking about it, but it's just going to take time. And we have this wonderful foundation now that we can build on. And it's certainly going to be providing us with multiple more opportunities in the future, both short and long term.
Well, Dr. Arts, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Dr. Johan Arts is a transplant surgeon at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. Narissa and Peter March of Omaha, Nebraska. Peter gave a kidney. Narissa received one. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if anyone's a B negative out there, Narissa's cousin is looking for a kidney in L.A. Or he's been waiting like 7 or 8 years on the waiting list. So please donate.
Well, I hope that comes about soon. And Mike Dodge of Mason City, you're planning to share this message about kidney donation with others, right?
Yeah, I've started talking with the PR department there at Mercy, and we're putting together plans to go on a statewide 99-county tour to talk about my experience as a donor and kind of educate people around the state to try to knock out that list.
Well, Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mike Dodge, a kidney donor from Mason City, part of that chain that took place in January at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines, where 5 people gave kidneys and 5 people received kidneys in just 3 days. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from John Pemble in Des Moines. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Snow or No Snow, we're going to talk about the documentaries, a 3-part documentary, Lost Nation, The Iowa Way. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.